Chapter 12. "Now remember," Leia said, "we call it the Remnant, but to these people it's still the Empire." "An empire without an emperor," Han commented. She patted his hand, "for which we may be thankful, my dear." She sighed as a darker thought intruded. "And the New Republic is something of a remnant these days as well." The Millennium Falcon had finally completed its long, dangerous crossing of enemy-dominated space to the Imperial capital of Bastion. A squadron of Imperial Star Destroyers flew escort close alongside, their long, wide hulls almost walling off the stars. Their destination wasn't the planet at all, but a Super Star Destroyer that stretched a full 4 kilometers left and right from the docking port, and which carried a crew larger than the population of cities. In the docking bay, a military escort met Leia, officers quivering at the salute. Behind them was a military band that drummed and thumped them the 50 or so meters to their shuttle, a deluxe Lambda-class vehicle that featured a passenger compartment with fixtures of solid gold and a soft-spoken military aide who offered drinks and refreshments to fortify Leia and Han for the 10-standard-minute trip to the world's surface. "The Empire hasn't changed its style much," Han said. He tugged at the collar of his general's uniform. Leia had made him wear full dress on the theory that Imperials were conditioned to defer automatically to anyone wearing a uniform with sufficient badges of rank. Leia herself had chosen for the occasion a gown that was as uniform-like as possible, with a high collar and a double row of jeweled buttons down the front. "Did you notice when Vanadorja left us?" Leia asked. Han gave a startled look over one shoulder. The only person to share the compartment with them was the aide, who had perched on a chair a tactful distance away, far enough to permit them to speak in lowered voices without being overheard. "No," Han answered. "I'll lay you a wager that Grand Admiral Pelion is listening to her report right now," Leia said. "I don't take sucker bets." The Lambda-class shuttle dropped close to the planet's surface and sailed low down a long avenue, past formations of thousands of stormtroopers and uniformed fleet personnel, all bracing into a salute as the shuttle drifted past. The late afternoon sun stretched the soldiers' long shadows across the pavement, producing the illusion that each ranked formation was followed by a dark legion of ghosts. "Quite a welcome," Han said. "They're trying to show us what valuable allies they'd make. Troops galore, a superstar destroyer, precious metals plating the furniture. And what do they expect us to give them in return for all this?" Leia gave her husband a significant look. "They'll tell us, I'm sure." The shuttle began to float upward as it approached Imperial headquarters, a stupendous monolith of polished black marble, gleaming bronze and dark reflective windows, with shield generators and turbolaser installations perched on a series of stepped-back ledges from which emerged a final, slim pinnacle that stretched upward to a bright crystalline starburst at the very top. It was as if a giant black fist had raised a single finger to indicate that the galaxy could have only one law, one government, and one absolute ruler. It was toward the starburst that the shuttle rose. It lined up on one of the long crystal rays of the starburst, then brought its docking arm to its tip and hovered there effortlessly on its repulsor lifts. The aide rose from his seat and stepped to the hatch. "I hope you enjoyed your flight," he said, and at a touch of his fingers the hatch hissed open. The crystal ray, fragile seeming from the ground, was actually a quite sturdy docking arm, transparent crystal supported by a strong silver alloy skeleton. Leia thanked the aide, straightened her shoulders, and marched down the tube, with Han one pace behind and off her right shoulder. After about 60 meters, the docking arm ended in a large glittering room roofed with faceted crystal. To Leia's surprise, she realized it was an arboretum, filled with thousands of bright exotic blossoms spilling out of their neat rows. Their fragrance perfumed the air. The setting sun set their petals aflame. As if in deliberate contrast to the brilliant color that rose in profusion behind him, Gilad Pelion, dressed in the plain white uniform of an Imperial Grand Admiral. He had put on 10 kilos since Leia had last seen him, and his hair and bristling mustaches were white. But alert intelligence still shone in his dark eyes, and his pace was brisk and his clasp firm as he walked to the docking port to take Leia's hand. "Princess," Pelion gave her a courtly bow, "Supreme Commander." Pelion greeted Han as well, but did not bow over his hand. He stepped back and turned again to Leia. "I received an urgent message for you from New Republic Fleet Command," he said. "They failed to contact you and wished me to relay the message to you." Leia took an involuntary step back as her heart gave a lurch. Jaina. During the Borleas campaign, Leia had seen for herself the relentless way Jaina was driving herself, both against the Yuuzhan Vong and against the darkness that threatened to claim her soul. Jaina was far too young to cope with the constant tragedy and loss that had been hers since the beginning of the war. Her friends and comrades killed in action, her teachers lost, her brother, Anakin, killed before her eyes, and Jason gone to wherever Jason had gone. In response, Jaina had grown hard. But to grow hard was also to risk growing brittle. Jaina had been riding with death, sharing her cockpit for far too long, and it was only her ferocious willpower that was keeping her from toppling over the brink. Her willpower, which must one day fail, along with her luck, which had failed. Leia knew it. Han's strong hands caught Leia's shoulders and buoyed her up. A smile drew itself across Pelion's face. "Good news, Princess," he said. "Your son Jason has escaped the Yuuzhan Vong. He's arrived at Mon Calamari in good health." Leia felt her knees weaken and willed herself to remain upright. Without Han's support, she might not have succeeded. Whatever minor doubts she might have had about Jason's survival had been erased days ago when she'd received his force message. But still, she should have known an official transmission would follow. It wasn't about Jaina after all. It wasn't about more death, more sorrow, more grief. "Yes," Han hissed in her ear. "Did you hear that, Leia? Jason's alive." His arms wrapped her from behind, and she felt the ferocious joy of his embrace. Dizzily, she realized that he hadn't entirely believed her last assurance about Jason's survival. He loved her, and so had consciously decided to believe her, an act of will, but still a part of him doubted, and that part wanted official word. With effort, Leia summoned speech. "Thank you, Supreme Commander," she said. "You've..." Still wrapping Leia in his arms, Han gave an unrestrained whoop of pleasure that nearly deafened her. "You've made us very happy," she finished, more understated than she would have liked. "If you would like to use our channels to send your son a message, you are welcome," Pelion offered. "Certainly, thank you." Han's message, "Way to go, Sprout," was composed quickly enough, but Leia's was more measured and took longer. "Once again, Jason," she dictated into Admiral Pelion's comm, "you have answered a mother's prayers." "An elegant sentiment," Pelion judged. A wry smile formed beneath his white mustache. "Jason seems to have inherited his parents' gift for escaping capture." "As well as our gift for getting captured in the first place," Han said. Pelion gestured toward the garden and its profusion of bright blossoms. "Shall I show you my garden?" he asked. "We can speak privately about your embassy." Leia hesitated. "Won't I need to speak to others as well?" "The Empire is not run by committee, Princess," Pelion reminded. "If I find that the Moff Council needs to know the substance of your message, then I'll be the one who tells them." Pelion drew Leia and Han along the rows of blossoms, pointing with obvious pride to his hybrid native orchids, to rainbow-colored fungi from Bacara, to lofty yellow Pydirian blossoms that so strangely resembled the moon's tall, aloof sentience. Contentment rose in Leia at the sight and scent of the flowers, at Pelion's pleasure in them.
"I had no idea you were a gardener, Admiral," Leia said.
"Every ruler should have a garden," Pelion said. "It's always useful to draw lessons from nature.
true.
Leia cupped a vast pink blossom and lifted it to her face, inhaled its scent.
From a garden one learns to cull the weak and unfit,
Pelion continued, and to encourage the strong and vigorous. He held up his thumb and forefinger. An inferior bud soon feels the strength of my pinch.
Leia sighed and straightened, letting the blossom fall from her fingers. She supposed it was too much to hope that she could stay for long on Bastion without being reminded what the Empire was really about.
Han gave Pelion's pinching hand an appraising look.
"And you make your plants grow in rows," he said.
"Each receives its proper allotment of space and sunlight, and no more," Pelion said.
"That's fair, don't you think?"
"But plants don't naturally grow in rows," Han pointed out.
"This is only possible."
He gave a deliberate glance at the glass arboretum overhead. "In a highly artificial environment."
"Bravo," Leia thought at her husband. "I swear I'll make a diplomat of you yet."
Pelion gave a judicious smile.
"You prefer the state of nature, then?"
"I think you will find that in a state of nature, the weak are culled in a far more merciless fashion than you find here."
Leia took her husband's arm.
"Let's say that I prefer a balance," she said.
"There should be enough nature so that the plants can thrive by following their natures, if you see what I mean."
"That notion of balance is derived from Jedi philosophy, if I'm not mistaken," Pelion said.
"But such hybrid beauty as you see here,"
he indicated the blossom Leia had just cupped in her hands, "is not a matter of balance or nature, but a contest of wills. The will of the gardener, and the will of the plant he must coerce into surrendering her treasure."
Leia dropped Han's arm and sighed again.
"I see we're doomed to talk about politics," she said.
Pelion gave her one of his courtly bows.
"I fear so, princess."
"The New Republic," Leia said, "would like to request that the Empire furnish us its maps of routes through the deep core."
"Those," Pelion said, "are among our most closely held secrets."
During the rebellion, the Empire had held out for years in the galaxy's deep core. The Imperials' knowledge of the narrow, twisting paths among the closely packed star masses was unmatched. Though the rebels had finally cleared their enemies out of the core, it had been grinding work, and probably a good many of the Empire's routes lay undiscovered.
"There are no more Imperial bases in the deep core," Leia said, "so the information has no value to you. On the other hand, you're aware of how useful such bases would be to the New Republic now that Coruscant is gone. And," she added, seeing the skeptical look on Pelion's face, "you know that the longer we tie up the Yuuzhan Vong in mopping up operations around the Deep Core, the less likely they are to look at Bastion as their next conquest."
"I have no fear for the safety of my capital," Pelion said.
"Then you haven't been paying attention," Leia thought.
But she knew that Pelion didn't mean this in all truth. It was probably just one of those things that supreme commanders of totalitarian regimes were expected to say.
"Once," Leia said, "I had no fear for the safety of Coruscant."
Which wasn't exactly true either.
"Perhaps you would like some refreshment," Pelion said.
He took Leia's arm and escorted her down the row of blossoms that seemed to get more extravagant and colorful the farther they traveled. Han followed, pretending interest in the flowers.
"I hope you can offer me something in exchange for this information," he said. "The Moth Council won't want these secrets given up."
Leia smiled.
"Didn't you just say that you'd tell them what you wanted them to know?"
"I will. But unfortunately," he added, "their busy little minds are capable of drawing their own conclusions, and it would be useful for them to know that something of equal value was given in exchange."
Leia had anticipated this. Offer, counteroffer, outright payment, blackmail, all the arsenal of politics.
"The New Republic would be pleased to offer in exchange everything we know about the Yuuzhan Vong—weapons, tactics, communications.
Internal organization? The whole package. Communications?
Pelion pounced on the word.
You've discovered that secret?
We have, Leia said. Thank you, Danny Kui.
Obsolete core routes in exchange for the greatest secret of the Yuuzhan Vong,
Pelion mused.
I predict no trouble with the Moff Council. Leia was pleased to hear this, but if necessary, she had been perfectly prepared to give the information to Pelion free of charge. As far as she was concerned, anything that weakened the Yuuzhan Vong relative to everyone else was a positive good. They came to the end of the row of plants, and Leia discovered a circular space surrounded by the trunks of Gamorrean cool-sap trees, with their dense canopy providing an arbor overhead. Beneath the foliage, a grand buffet had been laid out on a hollow circular table, a long array of silver chafing dishes along with great bowls of salads, fruit, and a selection of desserts and pastry. One entire table was covered with a glittering selection of choice liquors. In the center of the circle was a crystal-topped table set for three, the plates arranged around a bouquet of the most exquisite blossoms the Arboretum had to offer.
"Please forgive the informality and help yourselves," Pelion said.
Han eyed the banquet skeptically. "We're sharing this meal with which regiment?" he asked.
Pelion smiled beneath his white mustache. "Our previous meetings really hadn't given me an idea of your tastes, so I ordered a little of everything."
"Must be good to be on top of the food chain," Han commented.
Leia thanked Pelion and thought,
"Now I know how you gained those extra 10 kilos."
Leia and Pelion talked through the meal, but of matters of no importance. Talking of matters of no importance was an important political skill. Later, over cups of Neris Bud tea, Leia resumed.
"After you've had the opportunity to review the information we've gathered on the Yuuzhan Vong," she began, "I hope the Empire will accept our offer of alliance against the enemy."
Pelion raised his white eyebrows.
"I expected you to raise the matter earlier," he said.
"Dinner first," Leia said. "War later."
Pelion laughed. "Very civilized."
"The main forces of the Yuuzhan Vong are facing the New Republic now," Leia said. "You could cut their supply line from the rim with very little effort."
Pelion gave her a dubious look. "I can present your offer to the Moff Council," he said. "But I know what they'd say."
"Yes?"
"They would ask how the Empire would benefit from this action."
"Surely the Empire would benefit by helping to rid the galaxy of a menace like the Yuuzhan Vong."
Pelion considered this, then shook his head. "I would rather not go to the Moff Council with this offer," he said. "They won't approve it."
Jag Fell's voice whispered in Leia's memory. "It would really make more sense in the short term for the Empire to join the Vong." Leia found a muscle behind one knee trembling, and she stilled it.
"Why not?" she asked.
"Because, quite frankly, the New Republic is losing its war," Pelion said. "Your forces are undisciplined. Your government is in disarray. Your capital is lost. And your chief of state was tortured to death in his own office. Why should the Empire join such a debacle?"
Leia silently cursed Vanadorja and the report Pelion had doubtless heard before this meeting.
But maybe that wasn't fair, she thought. Pelion didn't need Vanadorja for this.
"If we join with you now, you'll only drag us down with you," Pelion continued.
He hesitated.
"That's what the Moff Council would say."
"That's what you say," Leia translated.
"Now if you start to win some real victories," Pelion went on, "then the Moff's position would be altered. But you'd have to convince us you're not dragging us into a disaster."
His dark eyes looked quite solemnly into hers. "And that, princess, is the truth."
"Well," Leia said, "that's that."
Something shifted in Pelion's face. "On the other hand," he said, "if you could offer something to the Moff Council, something concrete,
such as?"
Leia queried.
"The Moff Council is impressed by real things," Pelion said. "Solid things. For instance,
If the Empire could retain any worlds we took from the Yuuzhan Vong, it would impress the Moffs considerably. "'Not,' he added, at the protest in Leia's face, "'any worlds that still have your population on them. Only those the Yuuzhan Vong have remade for themselves.' He nodded confidingly. "'I think the Moff Council is most impressed by worlds, Princess.' The Empire could double its size, taking its choice of worlds, and it would cost the Yuuzhan Vong nothing. Again Jag's voice whispered in Leia's mind. Leia managed to seize control of her whirling thoughts. I have no authority to make such a concession, she said. And in any case, there are millions of refugees who want their worlds back. They would be welcome in the Empire, Pelion said. I think we could support them better than could your own overstrained resources. Then you can prune and cull to your heart's content. Leia saw the cynical remark in Han's brown eyes, but fortunately, Han didn't speak it out loud. As I said, Leia managed, I have no authority to make such a concession. But you will take my words back to your government? Leia nodded. Certainly. If we have a government when I get back, she thought. It wasn't until long after Shimra had dismissed them all that Numanor thought to question what had happened, and then it was Yug-Skell who spoke the words that made him stop and think. The delegation had walked in procession to the Damutek of the Intendants and broken up, and Numanor's path lay alongside that of his master, walking along the coiled corridors of the Damutek, breathing in the healthy organic stench of the building as young Intendants dodged respectfully to the side. So, Yug-Skell said, you have seen the power of the Supreme Overlord. Indeed, High Prefect. You felt his mind on yours, I know, when he interrogated you. Numanor recoiled inwardly at the memory of the mental pressure that had squeezed him dry. Yes, he said. Never think to lie to the Supreme One. He will know. Never, Numanor agreed. I'll never think it. Yug-Skell gave him a sidelong glance. "'Did you feel the Supreme One again when he incited us against Chagang Hul?' Numanor almost stumbled as he walked alongside his leader. "'High Prefect,' he said. "'Oh, yes,' Yug-Skell said. "'Unless you think it's normal for high-caste Yuuzhan Vong to scream and rant and drool in that way.' The breath went out of Numanor in a long, awed hiss. The Supreme Overlord had created that? Turned his closest subordinates into a mob of murderous fiends rejoicing at the fall of one of their number? Oh, yes, Yug-Skell said. The gods have given him that power, among others. His voice turned reflective. Not that Chagang Hul is such a loss. His ambitions always exceeded his talents. I remember an Escalatir ceremony— that he performed for one of my most talented advisers, young Faltivik. A fairly basic procedure, I recall, but, as our high priest would say, the gods discovered a flaw in the poor girl, and she joined the shamed ones. I have myself always wondered whether the flaw might instead have been in Chagang Hul. Numanor gave his superior a sharp glance. The high prefect's words flirted with heresy. But Yug-Skell was in a reflective mood, and he continued. "'Perhaps you remember Fazak Tsun, another Chagang Hul's unfortunates,' he said. He paused as he came before the door to his chamber and turned to face Numanor. He dropped a heavy hand on his subordinate's shoulder. "'You have made mistakes, Executor,' he said, "'and now you see what happens when too many mistakes come to the attention of the Supreme Overlord.' "'Yes, High Prefect.' Numanor's mind ran so fast he could almost hear the wheels spinning. "'How do you suggest I avoid Chagang Hul's fate?' "'Don't make any more mistakes,' Yug-Skell said blandly. The door behind him quivered open, and he stepped through it. "'And my particular advice, Executor,' Yug-Skell added, "'is that whatever you do, don't give the Supreme Overlord an itch.' Particularly one he can't scratch in public. The door shimmered shut behind him and left Numanor alone in the corridor. He was thinking hard. The stars streamed aft, and Han sat back in the pilot's seat and gave Leia a grim smile. "Well," he said, "that's that. Next stop, Mon Calamari." The day after their meeting in the Arboretum, Leia and Han had returned Grand Admiral Pelion's hospitality by having him to dinner on board the Millennium Falcon. Pelion and Leia exchanged discs. He had given her the charts of the deep core hyperspace routes, and she gave him everything the New Republic knew about the Yuuzhan Vong. Then formal toasts had begun, with Leia toasting the Empire. It had been getting easier with repetition. Then Pelion toasting the New Republic, and very kindly, the success and survival of Jason Solo. Then Pelion had presented Han with a new hyperspace comm antenna to replace the one shot off in the fight with the Yuuzhan Vong. If there were any more bulletins about Jason or any other friends or family, Han and Leia would be able to receive them without Pelion acting as a relay. Han eased himself out of the pilot's seat. "I want to get that antenna installed at our next jump point," he said, "and get your message and a copy of that deep core map off to the capital. And I'm going to send a copy of the map to Wedge Antilles, too, just in case no one in the capital knows what to do with it."
"Good idea."
An idea struck Leia. "I wonder if Pelion's antenna has been tampered with. Maybe anything we send will be transmitted to Imperial headquarters." "It won't matter," Han said. "The Empire already has the information they gave us."
"True.
I'll replace the antenna again, with one of our own, when we get back to Mon Calamari." Leia followed Han to the galley. He looked at her. "So were those core charts worth this trip?"
"Yes, we can keep fighters in the core for years raiding the Yuuzhan Vong."
"Even though the Empire isn't about to attack?"
"Not without preconditions, anyway."
Han looked grim. "He had a lot of nerve asking for our planets," he said.
"They're not our planets anymore," which I suppose was his point. "But I think that was just a test. If I'd agreed to his idea, it would have told him how desperate we are."
Han's tone turned thoughtful. "Would that have brought him into the war, or scared him off?
Good question."
Leia considered the matter.
"I think I've come to the conclusion that we don't want the Empire in this war."
Han was startled. "You sure? All those Star Destroyers? Those troops?"
"That's right," Leia said.
"Pelion said he'd join us if we started winning victories. But once we start winning, we don't need the Empire any longer. What Pelion really wants are concessions ahead of time, and then to be at the peace table when it's over. He wants a peace that serves the Empire's interests." Han began slicing up Charboat root. "And here I was starting to think that Pelion was a good guy." Leia made an equivocal motion of her hand.
"I'm not saying he isn't, at least by Imperial standards. But he's a head of state, and he has to look out for that state's benefit. He didn't persuade the Empire to end the war with the New Republic on the grounds that it was the moral thing to do. He did it by persuading the Moffs that it was in the Empire's best interests. Right now the remnant has barely recovered from the last war. Why should Pelion get into another life-and-death struggle unless it's to his advantage?"
"I guess," Han said.
"Not too much Charboat root, Han," Leia said.
"I'm a Corellian. I like Charboat root." But he stopped cutting, and instead gathered the root slices and dropped them into the saucepan. Then he turned to her. "Do you know," he said, "I'm not sure I need any food right now."
"Really?"
She frowned down at the stove. "Normally you're ravenous at this time of day." "What I just remembered," Han said, "is that we had hoped to be alone together on this voyage, and that now that Grand Admirals and Imperial spies are off the ship, we are alone."
"Oh."
She blinked at him.
"Oh, my."
The look in his eyes made her skin flush with warmth. He took her in his arms. "I think we deserve a little time together," he said. "Don't you?"